a bed and breakfast.
Oh, no, it could. If someone wanted to build a bed and breakfast, for example, that looks like a great big house, but it's truly a bed and breakfast, they can do that. For example, they wanted, you know, or if they had an existing colony house, they wanted to convert it into a bed and breakfast, they can do that. That's a commercial land use.
Okay, so bed and breakfast isn't,
Yeah, it's not a, that's not a home.
Okay, that's how.
That's short-term rental, so, yeah.
Is bed and breakfast also an outright allowable use in another zone? It's not just going to be in M1 through 4.
No, it's in many, many different zoning districts. That's even allowed in a residential zoning district with a use permit.
Okay.
So.
And then I had the other question was the same thing on the extended care versus the assisted living. So I wasn't sure what the difference was from one to the other and why one was a CUP and the other was outright allowed. But I think
And they're designed differently. They have different building and fire code standards based on them. And one's designed more like an apartment building and the other one is designed more like a hospital. And okay. I think we looked up some of those definitions a bit ago.
Okay. I'm going to go back up a little bit here to the adult oriented businesses that we've talked about already. What other zones are they outright allowed to be in?
And then
I guess further up to my question is,
list and see.
Why does it have to be included in this if there's an outright allowable?
I think in a proposed list, it's commercial and commercial service and industrial. And that's the proposed list.
So they are in... There isn't an allowable use in other zones currently. What I'm getting at is
yes.
if there are zones where they're outright allowed to have that sort of business, why do we need to include it in one of these four?
You don't. You don't have to. I think our city attorney did advise us that we have to be careful about not limiting them too much, but I think we don't have to allow them in a mixed-use zone if they're allowed in other locations in the city.
I think it would be kind of awkward to have this in a commercial space downstairs and residences above. I just think that this is not the appropriate, any of these zones for a business like that.
And the reason that was done is to accommodate one current business that's on El Camino Real, just south of the Vaughn Shopping Center, that is part of the proposed mixed-use zone one. That's why that's there. We'll get in trouble if we disallow that existing one because of the lawsuit history on that one. But we could shift the line over and leave them out of the mixed-use district one. It's only one property. So if we did that boundary, that's a suggestion you could make.
Yeah. What zone is it currently right now?
It's in a commercial retail zone.
So if that commercial retail zone changed to MU1, then they would essentially be just a non-conforming use and they can stay as long as they want.
There's legal implications to doing that. I think we'd be safer by just moving the MU1 boundary south one property and leaving them out of the MU1 boundary and leaving them in the commercial retail boundary. That way you don't potentially infect the rest of the MU1 zone.
All right, I understand.
That seems to be an easy solution to the discussion.
And then the last one, also on the recycling, what other zones do we have for recycling centers to be in outright? And I guess the way you described it as being sort of not really a big deal because of the type of recycling you're talking about.
Well, there's a couple different things. There's a recycling center, which you don't want with mixed use. And then there's a recycling kiosk where you're in a little, you might have a mom and pop store and out front they have a something the size of a garbage can. Okay. So
I hope.
So the small ones that I just mentioned are allowed in all these zones. The large one only allowed in the mixed use zone, or actually only in industrial zone. So that's an industrial land use. That's a big outdoor storage site.
So how do you regulate the amount of stuff that they would be collecting? I guess you could say how much you can fit in your space, but
in the small one, yeah, we have development standards on the size of what it can be.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all I have for right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Peak.
Uh, clarifying question, then I have seven zoning districts that I'll briefly comment on. So adult-oriented business is basically in a diamond adult world business. That doesn't, what do you, is there anything other than that type of business that fits in that category?
There are specific definitions in the municipal code as to what constitutes an adult-oriented business. I can't tell you exactly what they are, but Diamond Adult World is obviously one of those. There may be some other types of businesses that would
qualify. A cigar lounge.
You're talking about adult-oriented. You're talking about specific anatomical features being featured as part of the product line.
Okay.
So a cigar lounge, not that.
I'm just clarifying that we have a district for basically one store. Just being clear.
To be clear on that, though, if somebody wanted to open a strip club in Atascadero, is there a place that's allowed? Where that's allowed?
Is there a location?
No, I'm saying, is that something we would have to allow?
If we incorporate this into MU1 without being glib about it, then all of MU1, would we have to conditionally say, okay, there can be another Diamond Adult World now because now it's allowed in MU1. Now we don't have as much of a pull to say, no, there can't be a strip club. No, there can't be no one's going to have a movie theater anymore, but there's like things like that. Where I'm just wondering if this is basically a zoning district for one business in town.
We're going to take him out of MU1 and leave him in commercial retail.
Okay. That won't affect other businesses is what I'm trying to get at. There's not other businesses that fall in
classification. No, adult-oriented businesses, I'll just, there are specific definitions in there. There's adult live entertainment, adult modeling studio, motion picture theaters. There are very specific definitions of each of those.
Okay. So we have one business. Okay. So moving on, assembly religious facility contingent use permit. I'm generally in favor of a church can be wherever it wants to be, no matter what church it is. So I kind of think it should just be allowed. And I think it's more economical to have it in a small commercial building versus a large church facility sometimes for some congregations. So maybe that just something I thought about the other day when I was reading this. And then the building materials and hardware sales with outdoor sales or storage area less than 10,000 square feet. I'm assuming that's something like a Sherwin-Williams paint store or something like that that can fit under 10,000 square feet. They would still need a loading dock. I don't foresee a building materials, hardware sales with outdoor sales less than 10,000 square feet. And we don't have one now in those areas either. So just kind of curious if that's kind of what that would be. You would still need a loading dock, 18-wheeler for anything, a store like that. Number three is commercial kitchen. I'm assuming supporting cottage industry businesses, or if you had a muffin company and you baked your muffins there 3 days a week, something like that. I don't see a difference between that and contract construction services indoor. If you're a manufacturer of some cool wine barrel furniture and you just have a little showroom in the front and hammer them together in the back, That one's kind of interesting to me. I understand the outdoor one because, and I know probably there's a delineation between trying to have things innovation flex versus indoor construction services. But I see like Makers in a cool little mixed use thing relatively downtown could be a benefit, but I'm not going to.
And I wanted to clarify that is considered our artisan manufacturing use when you are making something and have a retail component. So contract construction services would be electricians or contractors
and then shipping them away.
Plumbers that meet there in the morning and gather their supplies. And
okay, I won't die on that hill. Skip the fitness facility. Mortuary services is an odd one to be allowed in mixed use with, but no crematory. I think that's just an interesting one. And then sales lot. So this kind of goes to, I think, the vein that Councilwoman Newsom was going for. We do have a sales lot in a mixed use zone. It's the trailer dealer down by Mr. Oslin's old business. The trailer that used to be a used car deal. I bought a couple of used trucks there for my business, and now it sells dump trailers and cargo trailers. That is a sales lot. And from my understanding, that's not MU3. So what happens if that business, I mean, that's the only sales lot in any of these MUs.
Yes, that is kind of a vehicle sales lot or
it is
auto sales. Yeah,
there's VIN numbers being distributed from that lot. So, but that's not a car lot. Would have to be an acre, right, or more.
Yes, so the vehicle sales or boat sales has to be at least an acre.
So trailer sales are. I hope I'm not whistleblowing on this business, but everybody drives by them every day.
Well, they're pre-existing. They've been there for a long time.
But it used to be a car dealership, and now it sells trailers.
So I think that
same business
transferred over.
Okay. Now is that going to be a problem if they want to somehow expand their operation to the lot next door? Are they not going to be able to do that? Or
it depends how we manage this list. And it's pretty small property right now. I don't think that's going to be a significant hurdle for them. I think if they wanted to expand, they'd probably want to move out of that location because it's just not that conducive to.
Sure, but if they moved out of there, someone might find it interesting to sell used cars there again.
Sure,
you know,
they could.
So sales lot, does that not incorporate anything else that we currently sell on MU, any of the mixed uses? We don't have,
for example, 777 site is considered a sales lot.
What about selling, you know, lawnmowers and golf carts and whatnot at Glenn's?
That's a kind of a retail and rental business.
So what's a sales lot, Phil?
What is a sales lot?
Yeah.
Sales lot is, for example, outdoor items for sale. It could be any items that are for sale. Might be landscape products.
Okay.
Anything that's outdoor.
I'm okay with being confused, but I'm noting that I'm confused.
It is defined legally on page 141. There is a legal definition for it.
Yeah, so there it is right here. I'm looking at it right now. It's permanent establishment for the outdoor sales of items, new or used. Not including sales lots that are vehicle sales.
Right.
So it doesn't. That's it. Could be anything.
Okay. Golf carts have VIN numbers.
Golf carts. Widgets. Oh, and back to the mortuary. We fit those in the mixed use because they're just a quiet land use. They don't have any disturbing tenants.
But as Mayor Pro Tem Dare has pointed out with the adult-oriented business, you probably wouldn't want to live above a mortuary. It would be quiet, I guess.
Maybe not, but we do have an existing one in the mixed-use one zone.
Yeah. Okay. So just to follow up just on one more thing, is the commercial kitchen one, the thought that escaped me was mixed use generally now, they can have a cafe in a mixed use. You can have something cooking a burger on a grill. If you know, there can be cooking smells. So a commercial kitchen wouldn't necessarily be a deviation from that.
Not at all. Look at downtown and what we have going on. I mean, restaurants are great uses to have with a mixed-use project. And keep in mind, too, a lot of these sites might not develop as a vertical mixed-use. Some might develop with some residential nearby, behind a commercial use, alongside it. Some of these sites may remain commercial 100% forever. That this zoning, the intent here is to allow flexibility. The intent, when we went through this list, is to accommodate as much of the good existing things that we have in the community by adding another layer of allowed uses for residential and kind of combining that without being restrictive. So thinking in a more general term, all we've done and reason we created this slide here was pull out the uses that are probably the most, you know, contrasting with residential. But the rest, I think they can be conditioned into a project and be quite compatible, especially given their offsetting hours of use.
Okay, that concludes our council questions regarding MU1 and MU4. Since we only have one member of the public and we're going to bifurcate this for council members, I'm going to allow public comment on, you know, MU1, MU4, and then 2 and 3.
All right, I have questions on this. With us going from commercial zones into mixed use, does that have an effect on ABC hours in residential? Because I know in the entertainment zone, you can do what you want now, but outside, I believe if you have housing, you would have to shut down your alcohol sales in a restaurant or other after 10 p.m. That one. The next one would be... Yeah, that's the big one on commercial zone. And then when you were bringing up drive-through, I kind of got confused. The drive-through, are you talking just in the El Camino at Morrow Road, or were you talking all of Morrow Road? And that's a concern if we are. Lastly, to gymnasiums or workout facilities that play good rock and roll, Councilwoman Funk would like to go to Megadeth with me, I'm more than happy to take her to the fair.
Okay, thank you. To be clear, the only reference to drive-through here is as an AUP in all four areas, correct? And it's only, and with the comment that it's only for pharmacy and banking, correct?
And there was a proposed caveat that drive-through restaurants would be allowed on Morrow Road, potentially only between Atascadero Avenue and El Camino Real, but that's at the council's discretion as well.
Okay, and that would be under MU
three. So we're not going to discuss that.
Anyway, okay, we're bringing it back to council. Have you know we've made some comments, some of which you guys can whatever we comment on, you're going to flesh it out and bring it back at a subsequent meeting. This is just, you know, kind of giving generic guidance. Is there anything else? Do you have some clear direction from us? You need clarification that we agree on or have consensus on something? And does any member of the council want to add anything?
Can we get, so I have some performance standards for gyms related to noise and hours. We're going to move the mixed use one boundary for our adult oriented business. And then I think, maybe Councilmember Funk mentioned that tattoo and piercing should just be allowed, and I didn't know if we had
Well, I would ask this question. I mean, I have a strong personal distaste for tattoos, but a lot of people like them, want them, and if they want to get them, I want them to get them in Atascadero. But there was a history of this. In fact, it was only a few years ago that Paso even began to allow tattoo parlors. Was there a time when there was particular concern on the part of planning staff about these establishments? What was the and what was your rationale for saying AUP? I mean, I'm an old man, but I guess I'm willing to go with the times, despite my personal thoughts. But I wanted, before we do that, I want to know what your thought process was for limiting it to an AUP.
Basically just transitioning away from what used to be listed as a restricted land use. And I think we're wanting to be much more flexible. And so I don't think staff has necessarily a concern about them being an allowed use. I think we wanted to softly transition forward because this land use has changed dramatically in the last 30 years and the social acceptance of it. And so I think it's purely at council's discretion whether you want to have it a conditional use, an allowed use, or not allowed in certain zones. But by today's standards, I think most downtowns, most cities are allowing them in a lot more locations.
And it's strictly, this just applies to MU1 through 4, not downtown or per se.
That's absolutely correct. This is talking only about MU1 through 4 tonight. When we come back with the larger land use list, we're going to be talking about other zones where we do propose a tattoo art studio to be an allowed land use, such as a commercial service zone and a couple other zones, not downtown yet.
Okay. Does anybody, other than Councilmember Funk, because you already any others of you have a comment on this? Okay, I understand, but I mean on this specifically, yeah.
The only comment I had is that, you know, the market will dictate how many tattoo parlors can exist in the city. My neighbor at one of my businesses in the Kennedy, there's Cherry Blossom Tattoos in the Kennedy Shopping Center. And it's kind of nice having that business because when everybody else is closed, at least they have patrons. So it's a little bit more security for them. I don't know. We don't have any problem with Cherry Blossom being our neighbor. And they're one of two or three in the whole city. So, and we have a White Moth or whatever it's called now by the police station. I don't know if that's in mixed use one.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say, I don't have any problem with tattoo parlors. I don't understand the aversion to it. I don't have any ink. So yeah. I don't care. I don't care whether I don't really understand what the issue is. Why it's such a specific.
Right. Okay. So everybody, Councilmember Newsom, everybody. Hope?
I think I'm the only one on here with ink. Anyways. Hey. A lot to be said on this council of dynamics. That is not a, can I even comment if I have ink? No, I'm just kidding. I don't have any changes to this.
Okay. All right. So, but I mean, are you okay with changing the AUP to an A on MU lease 1 and 4? Okay. All right. So I think we're good on, did you have any other questions of us before we move on from 1 and 4? Do you guys have any further comments on 1 and 4?
I do. On the adult oriented business, okay, you said you were moving the zone so there's not a conflict with the current business, so they're not going to be in MU1. But are we removing the allowed use in MU1
for that? Yes, we would be.
Because you didn't mention that when you were going through your list of things. I just wanted to make sure that allowed use in MU1 is not going to be there. It's going to be dashes all the way across. So, all right, thank you.
Correct.
And I wanted to respond to Councilmember Peek's comment about removing the CUP usage for churches in this. I think that, I mean, I want to make sure that we allow for churches. I was working on that last time. I do think that there's value in having CUPs where, you know, churches, we're navigating the way church uses engage with residential neighbors. So I would, I've heard residential complaints with regard to outdoor services and amplified outdoor services and various things at different churches. And it's just, I think that the CUP is not an unworkable thing to do to get a good neighborly fit.
Okay. I kind of concur with that comment. Does that make sense to you? Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Steph, any other questions of us before we move beyond 1 and 4?
Nope.
Okay. So with that, we will go to 2, and 2 is where Councilmember Peek is going to recuse himself.
I am recused.
Okay. Okay. And you do have the opportunity to speak as a member of the public if you desire. Okay. So let's move on to the discussion of MU2.
And up on your screen are just key kind of uses that we pulled out, but you can obviously talk about anything on the table.
A sec to look at that again. I did not have any questions on MU2 itself. Mayor Pro Tem, there is no questions.
Could you put the map up to remind us where MU2 is? It's in here somewhere, but
yeah, you can show it.
It's in here somewhere. Just give us a minute.
Oh, MU2 is the what used to be public up there.
Correct. It's the Ramona Road area.
Okay. Thank you.
That's why.
Right. Okay. Now, I think where we came out on that is fine. We allowed for the existing church and animal care usages. It's kind of its own little distinct animal, but I think it works.
Okay, so I see nothing regarding MU2. And your staff, you have no specific questions for us on this item? Okay, So with that, we are ready to begin discussing MU3, and I believe we have another recusal.
I have a recusal. Do I have to return after this?
Well, we have the other item on the agenda, so that's up to you, but we do have the other, the hazard plan. And we will take a very short break to allow you to time to return, and you and Councilmember Peek are welcome to come and speak on MU3 if you so desire. Okay, let's see the staff discussion for MU3, please.
Thank you. So just as an overview, mixed use 3 is kind of divided into two areas in the city. There is the area kind of at San Anselmo area, so the San Paulo Road area where there's existing hotels and a couple commercial uses. And then there's the area on San Anselmo West that has 777 auction and a couple underutilized and vacant parcels at the moment. Again, just to show you what the existing zoning looks like, there's some commercial tourist zoning that is currently at the San Paulo Road site, and then commercial retail that's at the 777 site and does incorporate the existing residences that are there today. So this is just an overview of what's there today, a couple vacant parcels, some commercial uses, and residential.
Is the 777 partial just the commercial sort of reddish color?
That is what they're using. I believe they are also using a portion of the adjacent residential parcel today.
The first residential that must have a house on it for you to consider it existing residential?
Correct, yeah. I think some of those houses are in a state of disrepair, but they're there still.
Okay, got it. And
just to...
Go ahead, finish.
Okay, just to orient ourselves, this is the San Paulo area site where a pain management specialist is, and then there's some hotel uses surrounding. And this is the 777 site. So you can kind of see their boundary there. And they do, I believe, use this residential parcel on occasion. The second portion of the city where mixed use 3 zoning is proposed is the Mora Road corridor. This is the existing zoning today. It's probably one of our most chopped up zoned areas. We have some commercial neighborhood, commercial professional, commercial retail, public and commercial tourist zoning on mixed use currently, on Mora Road currently.
Library.
And then these are our existing use patterns. So you can see there are some commercial uses. There's some public uses where the school district owns a particular piece of property. There's quite a few vacant properties and then quite a few that are already developed with residential properties and multifamily properties mixed in. So just to orient ourselves a little, this is just kind of a overview of Mora Road and the types of properties that we see. Some vacant properties. There's an existing residence that may or may not be used as a residence next to a commercial development. This is one of the newer developments there, which is Maresco Plaza. And this is some existing multifamily development. Looks like maybe 70s, maybe 80s. So the vision for the mixed use 3 area is kind of a horizontal mixed use model, which might have commercial fronting the primary street and then residential units in back. The unique thing about the Mora Road corridor versus the other areas is that some of Mora Road parcels do back up onto residential streets as well. So it kind of creates a transition to those single family neighborhoods surrounding Mora Road. We already have some projects that we believe fit with the vision for Mora Road. While this is purely commercial, there could definitely be residential component behind here in a future development, or some of the second floor areas could be residential as well. This is another development that was done quite some time ago as a mixed-use, horizontal mixed-use development. I believe the Saline and Tribal offices were in this building. And then if you go to the rear of the site, there are some residential townhomes. So this is kind of an example of that horizontal 50-50 split type development pattern. Access for the residential is off of Amapoa, and then access for the commercial is off Mora Road.
Before you leave that picture, the commercial on Mora Road, is that second floor commercial or residential?
The second floor was planned as mostly offices, but you can see on the site plan where it says unit 1, that one was intended to be a residential unit.
Got it. Thank you.
This is another example of some buildings that activate the street frontage. like we see with Maresco Plaza, and have some commercial uses on the ground floor, residential above. And this is a similar type building that has kind of more of an office feel to it. This is a project on Broad Street in San Luis Obispo that has some smaller scale commercial uses up front, and then a residential focused project behind. So some of our proposed standards for the mixed use three zoning district, again, density at 36 units per acre, which is standard amongst most of our multifamily and mixed use areas. The height 35 feet, which is how it exists today. And again, we do have that allowance for an additional 10 feet for architectural features to allow roof lines and differences in form. For the setbacks, what's currently proposed is a maximum setback of 15 feet. So that would push buildings towards the Moro Road or primary street frontage to kind of activate the street, which would mean parking in the middle of the site or towards the rear, depending on their layout, with some parking potentially off to an aside kind of configuration. And then along any residential street, it would be a 12-foot minimum to allow buildings to come a little closer to the street and match adjacent residential zoning districts. Again, on that double-loaded secondary front street would have that 12-foot setback as well to accommodate matching the existing zoning districts around it. Side and rear setbacks are similar to commercial zoning districts where there's none technically required. Currently along Moro Road, there is a planned development number 3 overlay that does acknowledge that they are transitioned to a residential area. And so they do have a 10-foot setback if you are adjacent to residential uses. And again, our floor to ceiling ground floor height would be 14 feet, which would accommodate a variety of commercial uses, but not be that ginormous space like we would have in our more intense commercial areas. I think we already kind of talked about uses, and we can talk about uses more when we get to the use table. But in general, again, this is a variety of uses that could be located here. We could also build in some commercial requirements. So we could say that along the primary street frontage, whatever building is there, we want 100% of that building to have ground floor commercial space so that they don't take up space with a residential lobby or elevator shafts or things like that. We could also say that commercial needs to be a minimum of 35 feet deep in order to be a viable commercial space. So a lot of times our tenant spaces need to have a certain depth or width in order to be rentable and viable, and 35 feet seems to be an appropriate depth for those. We could also adopt standards that have a minimum commercial building frontage. So instead of just having one building that meets the minimum setback and then a sea of parking, we could say, you know, we want a majority of the street frontage to have buildings against it, similar to Maresco Plaza. For use considerations in the zoning district, we know we want to incentivize offices here and kind of creating a sort of a medical and office center for the city. Currently, our parking standards disincentivize medical offices a little bit. They sometimes do have a higher parking need, but sometimes they don't. And right now, our parking standards are kind of blanket across all of those medical uses. And so you can see it's one space per 200 square feet of floor area for medical offices versus other offices that are at one per 500. And so this standard generally leads to a need for larger parking areas, and we might consider adjusting that standard if we're trying to incentivize medical offices and movement towards that for Moro Road. This is an example of a recent project that was approved in entitlement and is coming in for construction documents soon. So this is the parcel between Maresco Plaza and the Brickyard. It's a vacant parcel currently. And so they did do full commercial along Morrow Road, and you can see that the depth of their tenant spaces range from 36 feet to 50 feet. So the standard of 35 feet seems to be easily accommodated for these types of developments. We also see a majority of their street frontage with buildings. They were able to do this because they are shared access with Maresco Plaza, and they have an egress onto the residential street behind them. So we wouldn't necessarily want to say you always have to do this. We do want to allow for driveways, but this is a development that takes up most of their primary street frontage with building and activates the Morrow Road corridor. And then as promised, we're back to uses. So this is the same table as we saw for the other ones with some key uses pulled out, but you do have the full use list attached to your staff report this evening. And so with that, we're going to open it up to discussion. We did have a couple key questions, as we did for our other zones before, and then we can also dive into some of the nuances of use.
Okay, so do you want us to go through these things, or just first we'll ask questions, I think. And I will allow, you know, we are going to allow public input on this. So first of all, any questions for staff or pro tem Darius?
I have one quick question. On the, you had shown the graphic or listed the information of a 14-foot ceiling for buildings for the commercial ground floor. Is that a minimum? I mean, if somebody wanted to make it a 16-foot or 18-foot ceiling, they can do that?
Correct. It would be a minimum.
But it's a minimum. Okay, so they can go taller if they want to. Okay. Correct. That's all I needed to know.
Yeah. On the setbacks, how do the Caltrans right-of-ways along Morrow Road affect the effective setback?
Yeah, so the setback would be from the edge of the right-of-way line, which at this point for the built-out portion of Morrow Road is the back of sidewalk.
Okay. I see some dissent there from somebody who has property there. Is there any reason that we can't allow for restaurant drive-through in this area?
No reason.
Okay. And with regard to the 14 feet versus 12 feet, for if we're focusing on medical uses and office type uses, is there a compelling justification for requiring a 14-foot minimum versus a 12-foot minimum?
I think most office uses can be accommodated in 12 feet. I think 14 feet gives us not only sort of a more architectural presence to look more commercial on the ground floor, and has a wider variety of uses like restaurants and kitchens and things that need a lot of duct work. But just for offices, they can be accommodated in 12 feet.
Okay. And with regard to the 35 feet minimum depth that you were discussing as a potential option for commercial spaces, were you at the Chamber of Commerce event there in that Maresco or building or near there the other day? Because there was a small business with a young female entrepreneur that has, you know, cute stuff to wear at your quinceañera and other things. And I was wondering about that depth of that business as an example, as an approximate depth, if that was... I'm guessing it wasn't 35 feet deep.
We can definitely measure and see what that is and tailor some standards to make sure that we have the right number.
Okay. Because that seemed to be a workable business in a cute small business that could operate in a space that wasn't as large as what we were envisioning as requiring as a minimum.
Having attended that mixer myself, yeah, that business was definitely probably 15 to 20 feet, but the building itself was probably 35 because there was another unrelated, well, related by blood, but unrelated business on the other side of the wall. So the building itself may have been 35
feet. And that would be allowed. So if you had 35 feet depth, it would allow for those bigger uses, but you could come in and divide them up if you had smaller tenants.
Got it. I didn't want to too far in a comment, but I would agree with the gist of Councilmember Funk's question that if we're specifically identifying this as an area for potential offices and medical offices, then I don't see the rationale for requiring 14 feet. If somebody envisions a restaurant, you know, they can certainly do 14, or as Mayor Pro Tem Dara said, even taller, but we shouldn't require something that's a higher ground floor minimum than the very types of businesses we're asking to locate there. So if we're if we're trying to set the stage for this corridor to be, you know, medical offices and other things like that, then we shouldn't require more than what's necessary to allow those particular kinds of businesses. Could you go back a few slides? I'll tell you when. Keep going there. Well, no, that was the... And it relates to this discussion about minimum 70% frontage, using up a minimum of 70% of the street frontage with buildings, allowing the other 30% to be potentially driveway ingress and egress. Why? And I think, are we really going for, we don't want a parking lot out front? You want presence, but I mean, if somebody wants to push the building back and have, let's say, like in this case, have the plaza out front or something like that, what's the rationale behind requiring 70% coverage on the front, other than not putting the parking out in front?
It is purely design. It is purely about creating a streetscape there that's conducive to a pedestrian environment, a residential environment, a mixed-use environment. It's also about looking at what we have on Highway 41 right now. It's a very wide width out there. The right-of-way is huge. You've got a huge parking and landscape setback already. You already have a street tree requirement. And so it's a community design issue. It's about having a space that feels comfortable. And all of those things help. It helps even reduce traffic speed. It helps with an efficient use of the land, and it helps it become more attractive. That's it. We don't have to do that. And these are suggestions, and our consultant has made some of these suggestions, and we thought they were wise given what's been done in other areas and how they've come out and how we visualize these projects.
Yeah.
But certainly there's flexibility that could be added, and that's completely up to us.
Yeah. In my own mind, think flexibility, other than I wouldn't want to see the parking out front, because in that, you know, is more of a, it does the opposite of what you just described, to have the parking out front. But there might be other uses other than physical building that would still be inviting and what have you. In regards to parking, you brought up parking, and maybe our requirements for parking for medical offices are too high or something. There is public park, you know, available free public parking along the roadway here, right? I mean, that Caltrans striped in what the public initially found a confusing way, but I think has gotten the hang of.
Yes, so there is on-street parking.
That would kind of indicate we could be more lenient with the parking requirements?
Yeah, we believe the addition of sort of that much on-street parking and how Morrow Road operates, we haven't seen a huge parking concern.
Right.
Except at the Yoga Studio.
Consider, you know, adjusting those parking requirements based on the availability of the public parking out front. Okay, can you back up another couple slides? I just want to see if there was something else.
Can you go back?
Yeah. Okay, no, I think that's it. I think I'd like, go ahead.
There we go. On the ceiling discussion that we were having, it sounds like my colleagues here are okay with lowering the ceiling. I want to recommend that we stay with the 14-foot framing of it anyway, because it can, if your business is such that you don't need a 14-foot tall ceiling, you can soft it, you can do a suspended ceiling. There's all kinds of things you can do to bring it down to change the environment. I mean, sometimes, yeah, restaurants feel more comfortable with a much taller ceiling. So it just, I think it adds the flexibility. So you don't, 14 foot would be your limit, if that's what it's built at. But you can bring it down to 10 feet and change the environment of it. So I would recommend that we do stay with the 14. I wouldn't even mind going taller, but if 14 is fine for something like this, but there's other construction options to make it so that way, even if somebody's using it with a 10-foot suspended ceiling and then they leave, somebody else can come back in and raise it, make it, you know, bring it up as high as they want. Even exposed structure possibly with ductwork, that's an architectural thing. But anyhow, I think 14-foot is fine.
You probably answer this question better than I, though, and it is, what additional cost are we imposing on somebody to make it 14 versus 12? I understand the flexibility, somebody could come back later.
Suspended T-bar ceilings are very common, and it's actually a good way to route your ductwork and any other infrastructure.
Right. Looking at the addition, what is the additional cost to require that to go?
I think it's part of doing business.
Well, I mean, for me, I can accept that if it's not a great cost.
Yeah, I don't think
it's a great cost. But if it's a great cost, then I'm going, why are we imposing that?
No, I don't think it's a great cost at all.
Flexibility.
I think it's a standard thing in commercial architecture.
Yeah, if it doesn't add a huge amount of cost and it's standard, I'm okay with keeping it at 14 feet. It's, you know, again, it's, I want to have a rationale if we're going to impose a cost on people in developing a property.
Exactly. And this is not final. So I would like staff though to ask that question, you know, ask some builders that question. So if you come back for this for final approval, that's a 3% additional cost, or that's a 25% additional cost.
Well, let me
two different answers.
Let me explain a little bit further. I mean, you're going to have this open shell where you can see the framework above you, and then you're going to have your ductwork and any whatever other infrastructure. You're going to cover it up one way or another. Mm-hmm. So chances are in a commercial building, it's going to be a suspended ceiling. You can do a suspended hard lid. It doesn't have to be the acoustic ceilings that you're used to seeing. But either way, there's going to be a suspended ceiling. You either hang it down 2 feet or 4 feet or whatever it is that you want. So I don't think it's not really increasing the cost.
Of building a 14-foot first floor wall versus a 12-foot floor.
Yeah, it's two extra feet.
I'm totally open to what you're talking about. I just want to know what is the cost differential when you bring this back. We don't have to give a definitive answer this evening.
We heard you. Thank you. And we've already actually asked a lot of questions, the development community, about this ceiling height. And a lot of these mixed-use buildings are already doing that proactively. La Plaza, 16-foot, 6 inches ceiling height all the way across in all their tenant spaces to attract those commercial tenants. We didn't require it. Okay. They built it.
Yeah. I'd just like you to confirm that, or we hear it from them, and I'd say, fine. You know, I just want to know, when we pose a cost, I want to know how realistic that is and what that cost is. Is it 2%? Is it 10%? Is it 25% additional cost? You know, that's all I want to know. And like I said, we don't have to do that tonight. We'd like you to be able to address that. Okay, I'm going to open this up to public comment. And I understand Councilmembers Peek and Newsom are not going to comment on this item, but if they are, now would be the time to come upstairs. Go ahead.
So as a property owner on Morrill Road, I'm already impacted by setbacks from Caltrans. I went out and measured today. Currently, because Caltrans gave me 2 more feet of a driveway when they redid Morrill Road, I now have 14 feet total from my setback to the Caltrans right-of-way. From the right-of-way to the bike path is another 14 feet. And then you can talk the road. So I have an issue there with the setback, because different areas of Morrill Road have different open ditches that could not be filled in or what have you, because it was cost prohibited for any type of frontage improvement, or Caltrans would have done it in my area. I was fortunate enough to get another easement, so I could put a drive-through in if I wanted to. I think at the Kerberell area of Morrow Road, we should still be able to put a drive-through in. There's plenty of room there. I don't have residential there as of yet. I'm concerned about losing the right to serve alcohol till midnight by mixed use. I think it's great for the property value. I've looked into things. I basically have a half an acre If I went HUD housing, I could actually do 48 units right now, I believe, with no parking. Not something I would consider necessarily, but it's always in the back of my mind. Don't know if I would tear the place down and start over or not, but I now have a very viable restaurant opening on April 1st in there. It's been operated as a restaurant for years. Before that, it was a fruit stand, or it was Supervisor Arnold's daycare center, and it was a house before that. And yes, I passed it since 1981, and it was built in 1947. So I think we do pretty good with mixed use there. My parking is on the right. I currently have 21 or 22 spots of parking, and it also has workforce housing in there. So requiring me to put my parking in the rear is not necessarily the best thing, depending on what type of food establishment you have. So those are my concerns there, and I hope that we look at it a little differently going down in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. Question for staff on this area in general. You know, we have the very large right-of-way for Caltrans for 41. And if I understand things correctly, you know, their right-of-way extends obviously onto the sidewalk, out up to and includes the sidewalk, the Caltrans right-of-way?
Yes.
And so are we then, you know, because you have essentially the sidewalk, you've got like the bike lane, and then you've got the parking, and then you have the actual traveled roadway in the middle. So when we talk about front setbacks in this area, what distance we were talking, and we were talking from the edge of the Caltrans right-of-way?
You're talking about from the property line, which is the edge of the Caltrans right-of-way.
Okay.
Yes.
So, got it. And so, and what's the front setback we're talking here? 10?
Minimum of 15. It's about street trees.
So can you go to the picture of the Naresco Plaza that you have there? Because I didn't think they were.
Yeah. Where's that?
We did measure at some point in time, and it was larger than we thought it was. So I believe they were at between 15 and 20.
Yeah, because that's
surprising. We'd have to go re-measure, but
visibly, I don't know. Yeah, it looks more like 10 to me, but maybe it's 15.
Yes.
Because I thought.
It was more than we thought.
And if you cruise through these pictures to some of the examples you have from, you know, that are just AI or they're for other communities or something. You showed a couple of sample pictures there like that. You're saying that's like 15?
Yes.
Because I don't, I mean, it feels like 15 is a lot for the property owner to give up. You think it's pretty typical. I mean, it seems like are there a lot of non?
I also want to clarify. So 15 is their sort of maximum setback. So they have to build up to 15 feet. They can build forward if the street tree, we have a street tree standards, and some of those have less setback. So they can build more forward depending on what street tree pattern they choose. And then 15 feet is the farthest back we would want.
Okay. No, I thought we were talking 15 feet minimum setback. What's the minimum? Just enough to fit a street.
The minimum would be what our street trees required, and we have multiple options so that they can design their site accordingly.
Right, because you could have the you know, a cutout for the street tree here and there, but in between the building could be even clearer.
Correct. If you do larger trees, they're spaced farther apart, your building could come forward.
Okay, so we're not talking 15 minimum or even 10 minimum. We're talking enough to allow trees.
Correct.
Okay, I'm comfortable
with that. So it could be, part of the building could be zero.
Could
and
be.
Then you could have it could jet in, and then you'd have a space for a big tree and so on. Okay.
Okay. I'm more comfortable with that. In regards to the parking, again, I think in general, we don't want a huge parking lot out in front. I don't mean to say there should be zero parking on the front, but, you know, we don't want the entire frontage to be a parking lot and then have the building set 40 feet back is what I'm kind of
We can
at.
Look at refining those standards with that intent.
Okay. All right. Councilmember Funk?
Yeah. I would be with the mayor on the idea of allowing some parking up front, but not the entire frontage. to be parking, keep the front setbacks to a minimum to accommodate the street trees. I mean, if they want a maximum, I'm not too fussed about, but minimum is a concern. We want to give developers flexibility to use these sites in ways that work with the sites. And, you know, they're all a little different. And I also, I'm not sure why we would necessarily need to have 12-foot minimum setbacks on side-facing, on the second side of a corner lot. That's...
Was that then, though, again, a minimum or a maximum setback or a minimum setback?
That was a minimum.
On a corner, on a side street.
And, you know, since we've got things that are going to be...
So that is the double loaded. So that would be like where a site backs up onto Amapoa or Tecarita.
Well, yeah. Or curb.
But yeah, but you're talking about double loaded secondary front. Oh, so that's the
street.
That's
in the
not
back.
The corner lot. That's the back side.
That's not the corner. So on a corner lot, it would still be sort of that front. That is sort of the primary. So if you had residential units towards the back and they happen to be on the corner, they would be set back 12 feet like all the other residential units. And then the commercial building on the corner would be the same as what you would do yeah. on the primary front.
Double okay. loaded is if it goes back to another street, like yeah. the property okay. is deep enough, it fronts Amapoa and it fronts
sure.
Morrill Road, or like that one property that fronts Atascadero Avenue.
Right. And I'm conscious also, I'm okay with that then. If that's what the multifamily properties on there also have that same setback, that would seem consistent. I am concerned about the fact that we're creating the opportunity for a lot more development that is going to face onto and run on and off of Amapoa, which is not a city-maintained street. I don't want to block the development, but I do want us to consider if there's some way to build in some kind of requirement that there needs to be some participation in the collective enterprise of maintaining the street for new developments that are part of this, so that we don't get something that's just unworkable.
Well, especially since Amapoa is effectively one lane where the big redwood tree sticks out in the middle.
Yeah, yes. they would have to do frontage improvements. And I'm not sure, Amapoa might be less than 40 feet, or it might be 40 feet and it's just not built out. So there is opportunity to improve the street. I think there's some potential legal challenges with requiring that a district be created and not everybody's participating. I don't know how that would work. We'd have to work through that. I will also say that mixed use is allowed in these zoning districts today. And so we're not really increasing development potential of these properties. We're just sort of creating development standards about where each use can be.
Okay. I would like staff to explore that, because we are incentivizing and create by making it easier to do these kinds of developments and build out. We're creating a situation where you're going to have employees that want to park on Amapoa. You're going to have residents who are coming and going on that street. And you know, we've got to deal with the reality that it's not a city maintained street. And what makes that just totally unworkable for people is you can't, it's really hard to get the neighbors together to pitch in to do the street like they did on Tecarita and some other places, because the ownership is too dispersed, or you have non-resident ownership of these kinds of properties. So I want to make sure that, you know, as you have this kind of new development that we're incentivizing, that we be attentive to the ways in which we can create a workable situation to maintain the street.
Okay.